A local seed leads to a nationwide company. The story of the Knotgrass family, today in the Upper Cumberland. It is the story of a homeschool curriculum that began here in the Upper Cumberland and now serves students all across the nation, even around the world. Charlene Knotgrass is the author of the Knotgrass History Homeschool Curriculum, along with her family. Charlene Knotgrass, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
How did you come along with your husband to create a curriculum?
Well, we had homeschooled ourselves beginning back in 1990. And along the way, while my husband was serving as a minister, we both created curriculum for the churches where he was working. And I know this sounds really strange, but we just found that we were passionate about writing curriculum. We just loved doing it, and our hearts were really leaning toward helping other homeschoolers, too. So we had no business plan. We did not know what we were doing, and we're just very grateful here 25 years later that it has worked so well.
The other part of that is that you were homeschooling at a time when homeschooling was not very prevalent.
That's exactly right. And part of our passion not only is writing curriculum, but also supporting the homeschoolers who use our curriculum. Because when we started homeschooling in 1990, we had only known ever two or three families who homeschooled. And our feelings about it were mixed, but we came to believe that it was best for our family. However, there wasn't a lot of curriculum available at the time. I went to a Christian school and asked them please to sell me a math book that first year. And we homeschooled for 2 years, and I worked too hard at it. I just felt so much pressure to do it right. And we gave up on homeschooling for 2 years. And it was after we moved back to Tennessee and to Cookeville that we came back to homeschooling. And so when we started writing curriculum, several years after we started writing it, we realized that mothers especially really needed a lot of support. So we do a whole lot in our company to do that. I write a blog of encouragement for 5 days a week. I've been doing that for over 10 years. And that's a very important part of our business too. But the way we started writing curriculum, as I said, was because we were doing it for churches. But when we started, we had no idea that we would end up writing history. It's quite a story for us. We were at a homeschool convention, and we were selling. At that time, I had a science curriculum that honored God that I had written, and we had a book, art curriculum based on the Book of Psalms. And that's all we had specifically for homeschoolers. We also had some Bible studies as well, which we had thought maybe we could sell to both homeschoolers and to churches. We also sold some classic literature and kind of supplemental materials for homeschoolers that other people had written. Well, at the very first convention we went to, it was in Nashville, a lady told us she wished somebody would write a Tennessee history. And we very naively looked at each other that afternoon and said, we could do that. And we spent the next year doing that. We called it Exploring Tennessee. And at the time, we had a friend at church who asked Ray to teach adjunct at Tennessee Tech in the American History Department because he knew that Ray had a master's in American history, also had a master's in New Testament. And so Ray came to me one day and said, I'd like to write an American history for high school. I don't know if anybody would buy it, but I would just like to write one. And I said, well, go for it. He said, I'd like to write it the same way I learned it in high school. In Columbia, Tennessee, Ray's history teacher and English teacher coordinated their courses. They only did it 1 year, and it was the year my husband, Ray, was a junior in high school and taking American Lit and American History. He said, I would like to do it that way, and I would like to add Bible to it. And so he did that, and we came out with that in 2002. And people immediately started saying, when are you going to write world history? So he wrote world history the same way. And then he wrote, let's see, we wrote Exploring Tennessee, Exploring America. We had a lot of customers in Chattanooga. And at the convention we went to there, people would come up from Georgia and they would say, well, I want an Exploring Georgia like you have an Exploring Tennessee. So we did that. And then it just went from there. Now we have 10 years of social studies. We have government, economics, geography, world history, American history. And but along the way, we people kept asking us if they could use our high school American history for their younger students. And we would say, well, I think the history part would work okay, but I don't think they need to be reading maybe Uncle Tom's Cabin and Scarlet Letter and everything quite yet, because students read several whole literature titles while they're going through our courses, even down as early as first grade. Either if the student's not reading themselves, then their mothers read them to them, because we've continued that literature component all the way down to the youngest students. So finally, we'd been answering this question for 3 or 4 years, saying basically, no, you don't need to buy our high school course. So we finally just kind of had a dust lap and said, well, I guess we're supposed to write middle school too. So we started writing middle school, and then we started writing elementary. And all we lack is our elementary world history and our middle school world geography. And you'll be able to start in first grade and use Notgrass history from first grade through 12th. So that's how it happened. It wasn't our plan. I think it was God's plan and not our plan is how it feels to us, because we didn't make a plan. We just followed what people ask for.
Charlene Notgrass is our guest as we're talking about something that has grown and has probably surpassed even her and her husband's thoughts of how it would all turn out. Talking about homeschool curriculum that's being done right here. Charlene Notgrass is our guest. When you started down this road, was there reluctance among school leaders in public schools, or even in private schools for that matter, to be willing to share curriculum ideas with you?
Well, we now sell to a significant number of Christian schools. And now homeschooling has expanded to where there are a lot of co-ops and tutorials, and students may go 2 days a week to a tutorial, and then they're homeschooled the other 3 days. We sell to a lot of those kinds of organizations. We have sold a little bit to public schools, not very much. We are selling now all over the world, not significantly around the world, but every year at the end of the year, we'll have maybe 10 or 12 countries where at least one person has bought our curriculum. And we're certainly selling all over the United States, just everywhere.
But now, when you started, were people willing to share curriculum ideas with you, or were you kind of like, oh, these are homeschoolers, we're not?
We've never felt a lot of opposition personally. Okay. You know, the reason I started homeschooling and homeschooled 2 years and then we gave up for 2 years was because I was paying too much attention about what I thought other people were thinking, and just wanting to make sure, especially as a preacher's wife, that people didn't think I was crazy. I remember the first year we homeschooled, I would say to people, we're going to try it this year. I'm sure I won't ruin them in 1 year. I said that over and over. And I believed that, you know, well, maybe it won't hurt my kids if I do this for just 1 year. But when we did stop for 2 years, a main reason we came back to it was that two of our children just begged us to do it again. The other one was reluctant, but that was because she was 12 years old and we had just moved to Cookeville and she was trying to find her way. It didn't take her long at all to decide that's what she wanted to do too. And we did wait until she wanted to do it before we started doing it for all of them. But I have not felt a lot of opposition. We have a lot of friends. We live in Gainsborough now, and we have a lot of friends who are either retired teachers and we've known them when they were still teaching. And they have been very complimentary and very supportive. And like I said, we have sold a little bit to public schools. It's not something we try to do.
Sure.
Because it is Christian. Ours is obviously, purposefully Christian. It's a shame that that's not as welcome in public schools as I wish it were, but not us personally. Now, we've heard stories. The closest thing, we had one little anecdote. When we first started homeschooling, it was not legal in every state yet. We were living in Illinois. My husband was preaching in Illinois at the time, and we took a trip to Michigan, and it wasn't legal yet in Michigan. And we would go on field trips every day while my husband was at a preacher's conference. And one day we went to the grocery store to buy picnic supplies for this historic field trip we were going to take that day. We were doing, you know, something very educational, but we just stopped in the grocery store to get some, you know, snacks and things. And the cashier said, "Why aren't these children in school?" And I said, "We homeschool." And she said, "My neighbor did that. They arrested her." Which didn't make my children feel very good. But of course, that, you know, that wasn't a direct threat to us. And another time, the public schools contacted us and said that our daughter would have to take a particular end of year test in algebra. But they had not told us that ahead of time. We had not used the same book. And we're members of an organization. We were then. We're not now because we're not homeschooling. But when we were homeschooling, we were members of an organization called the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And we contacted them and told them about the letter we had gotten. And that organization wrote a letter from an attorney. And nobody in Tennessee had to take that test. Mm. Those were our only instances, you know, very, very mild. But there have been people who went to jail back in the, especially in the 80s, in the decade before we started.
How does one start to write a curriculum?
Wow. That's a good question. My degree is in political science, so I have a lot of, you know, I've thought about these social study things a whole lot already. And my husband, as I said, has a master's in American history and one in New Testament. So we do a lot of research. We're very, very careful with our research. We make an outline and we start plugging in the pieces. I use National Park Service, the Smithsonian. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. University websites, old books, and just, you know, it's
But
it,
I mean,
takes a lot of work. Nobody knows who's never done it.
How do you decide what to include? I mean, if you just take U.S. history, at least there we're only talking about 250 years.
I know.
But you were talking about writing world history. I'm like, holy smokes, where do you even start?
Ray and I worked together to write our world history for middle school, and it's called From Adam to Us. So we began with creation, and it goes, I think we published that in 2016. So it goes, you know, to 2016. We choose themes. I can talk mostly about middle school because that is what I've written the most. But we do the most, you know, it's all a matter of judgment. And that is true for every textbook. That's not just a Christian textbook. Sure. I mean, Macmillan, whoever, you have to choose because, you know, this building wouldn't hold all the pages if you tried to say everything and nobody'd want to read it. So specifically for middle school, we chose in a unit, a student will learn about the main events that were happening. Let's take American history. The main events that were happening in Washington, D.C. We call that our American story lesson. Then another day that week, we will do some aspect of daily life at that time. Then another day, we will do a person who lived then. Let's see what else. We do another one we call our American landmark. And we'll take something like the Statue of Liberty or the Golden Gate Bridge or Mount Rushmore, and we'll tell how it was built, why it was built, who built it. And then the other day we do a lesson we call God's Wonders, and we'll take some amazing place God created. Like in world history, we do the Mediterranean Sea, the Nile River. Those are two that come to mind. And tell how that place affected what happened there. And but you take just like the Nile River and the Mediterranean Sea, you just a whole lesson on that. But they also learn what kind of animals live beside it, what kind of animals live in it, how it flows, what countries border it. So we, In our curriculum, we're trying to think of really big picture, but part of the way we tell that big picture is by talking about details. So that may seem like opposites, but it keeps interest. We also use lots of art from the time period, statues, paintings, crafts. We'll have images of those in our books and lots of images of places. And you can just learn, like I know in our lesson on Moses in From Adam to Us, we had a picture of a garment with that had been created, I forget which century, that had an embroidered representation of Moses in the bulrushes. And the reason for that is that it shows that these things the students are learning have been important to people, not only at the time that it happened and now, but through the centuries, people have thought that was important.
Charlene Nutgrass is our guest. We're talking about the homeschool curriculum that involves now really from the earliest days of school all the way through high school, and it's being produced right here in the Upper Cumberland. Charlene Nutgrass is our guest. She and her husband created a history homeschool curriculum that's now used nationwide, worldwide, in some parts of homeschooling. I guess this all comes at a time where history overall, in terms of education, has become less about dates and this happened then and this is who did it and all of that. Have you seen that in your writing?
Yes, and I I'll tell you, I was updating our American history for middle school during COVID and during the riots in the streets of 2020. And it was personally a very emotionally draining process. We want very much to show respect for every person and work really hard to do that. And I'm kind of stuck.
No, you're fine.
We want to treat issues that are in the news in a very respectful way. Like, and that one, I remember struggling to decide whether I wanted to call African Americans, Black Americans, or African Americans, for example. I have a homeschooling acquaintance who lives in Virginia, and at the time, her husband was on the police force of Washington, D.C., and she's a leader in homeschool circles in her area. And I called her and said, what do I say? Do I say Black American or do I say African American? And she said, I have friends who will be very upset. Did I say she's an African American? I have friends that will be very upset if you use Black American, and I will have friends who are very upset if you say African American. And I said, well, I just want to say what is honoring to that person. And she said, then that's what you need to say. And so I made sure in the introduction that I said, I may have offended someone, but it wasn't on purpose. I was doing the best I knew how to be respectful to everybody. One thing I think that is unique about our curriculum is our coverage of Native Americans. We work very hard to honor the first people who lived here. In our civics curriculum, we have a whole unit on Native Nation government. And, there's the federal government, the state government, and local government, but few of us think very much. There's also Native Nation government. And to honor them, we talked about the Code Talkers, the Navajo Code Talkers, who did so much to help America win in World War II, in the Pacific. And so we work really hard to cover the issues that are in the news in a historically accurate and respectful way. So maybe instead of, we do talk a lot, say, about civil rights conflict and all of that, but we also feature amazing scientific accomplishments or business accomplishments of Black Americans as a way not to just, we don't ever want anybody to come across as a victim, but as somebody created in the image of God who can do and has done amazing things.
What kind of rigors are involved in writing a curriculum? Fact-checking, sourcing, all of those sorts of things.
Yes, we are extreme. Wikipedia is not a source for not grass history.
You mean it's not true? Maybe not.
I will read a Wikipedia article to find out what the some of the issues are, to then go take those subjects and do real research on them. We have a staff, and we have people who do fact checking. We have people who do proofreading. We read. Everything gets read over and over and over again before it goes to print. That still doesn't mean we don't make a mistake every once in a while. My very favorite one is our daughter was working with a company at the time we came out with America the Beautiful, and she called me one day and she said, Mom, you can't be upset. You've got to laugh. You said that Cordell Hull won, that Woodrow Wilson won the Nobel Peach Award. prize, the Nobel Peace Prize. And I am sure I didn't do that. I know that was a spell check error because Nobel and Noble and Peach and Peace are awfully close together. So we only got 400 copies of that curriculum printed, and I like to call it the Noble Peach Edition. But we are very, very, very careful about our sources and making sure that everything is accurate.
How does the publishing process work with homeschooling versus, say, you know, Houghton Mifflin doing 50,000 copies of a history textbook or whatever it may be?
Well, we think one of the advantages of the way we do it is that it's not written by a committee. When you read a textbook written by a committee, it's not, it doesn't read like a story. And by doing it the way we do it, it does come, it's interesting to read. It's not just a bunch of facts arranged in a disorganized, often manner, but a story that flows. There are lots and lots and lots of homeschool publishers, and the proof is in the market, actually, I think, in homeschooling. You put your product out there, and the customer tries it. And in our case, we give people 15 lessons up front. They can just download online and see if they like it before they ever buy it. And we also have a generous return policy, too. So in homeschooling, with all these different publishers, you just get to know as best you can online by reading their websites and seeing what their philosophy is and finding out what other homeschooling mothers think. There are all kinds of, Facebook pages and places where you can find out homeschool conventions you can go to all over the country. So it's sort of market-driven, I guess.
Do you
print
books?
Rather than having somebody who says this is approved and this isn't approved.
Do you print books? Is it workbooks? Is it download?
We do hardback, full color textbooks with review material. So if it's for say a 5th, 6th, 7th, or 8th grader, you buy the textbook. And then we also emphasize, when my husband was in that junior year, when he was doing history and English together with his two public school teachers, his history teacher required them to read many, many primary sources. So we published a primary source book with every curriculum starting in 5th grade. And so there are homeschool curriculum products out there. I actually used one of them the year we quit homeschooling for 2 years that said, go find this, go find that, go find the other. And the reason we publish the way we do is because of our own personal homeschool experience. We know how hard that is, and going to the library and you can't find it and all of that. So we publish that book. So when you buy one of our packages, you would get, it's normally one textbook for the first semester and another textbook for the second semester, and then for a particular course, and then a book of primary sources and an answer key. And then we offer, for some of them, we also, if it's appropriate, we publish a map book and a timeline. And all of those are separate books. So in your main textbook, when you read a lesson, at the end of it, it'll say, do this in your map book, do this in your timeline, do this, read this in the primary source book. And then we offer an option of either a student workbook, which is worksheets, or a lesson review, which is strictly questions. And that way, two students in the same family, you have two different learning styles. The mother has two choices for whatever, however that student is going to learn best. We also have hands-on activities for every unit, which is a recipe or a craft or a play to do, or even all the way through high school, we have projects every week. And all of these are for the mother to decide what she wants to do. We don't expect anybody to I mean, some people do everything, but somebody who is homeschooling seven kids and is taking care of their elderly grandmother in their home and her husband's been laid off work for 6 months can't do everything that somebody else can do as one child who's, you know, going to end up at MIT, you know, and is brilliant. So we try to meet the needs of anybody who is homeschooling. So that's how we do it. We publish all of that. Everything that's a textbook or primary source is hardback, and the other things are paperback.
How much of a curriculum is getting a mom comfortable with the curriculum?
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. We write very detailed introductions telling them exactly how to do it and telling them, you know, like I said, at the end of every lesson, you know, these are your options. You choose which of these you want to do. But we have learned that mothers have different learning styles too. And so we have to offer video instruction for moms to know how to start this curriculum in addition to writing. And we'll do webinars and things like that also for people. There are Facebook groups like Knotgrass History Middle School users, you know, and the mothers answer each other's questions. And then somebody on our staff will pop in and, you know, clarify. So, you know, we're all people who are different. God has made us all unique. So, you know, I can't say that we have met every single need of every single person, but that's what we're trying to do in the way we do it.
Charlene Knotgrass is our guest, author of the Knotgrass History Homeschool Curriculum with her husband, Ray. We continue. It started as something that it was a necessity, but Charlene Knotgrass, this has grown into a business, hasn't it?
It has, and this is by far our best year ever. When our son, who is our business manager, and by the way, our children have written for the company as well. Our son, who lives in St. Louis, is the business manager, and he tells us what the sales are. We just hang our mouths open. It never was our intention. We just wanted to support our family and write homeschool curriculum and bless homeschoolers. Now we want to do well enough to keep our staff employed and for them, you know, to have what they need. But we've been absolutely amazed. John Mark Wendell was our state representative in Gainesboro in the Tennessee legislature, and he came to us one day we saw him at a festival or something, and he said, "Did you all plan to be in the right place at the right time as homeschooling grew like it did?" And we said, "No, you know, we've just been blessed, and we give all the glory to God because we, like I said, we really didn't know what we were doing. We just knew we had these gifts that God had given us, and they were things that we were passionate about. We love what we do. We loved the year. My husband and I traveled for years from Boston to Orlando to California, going to homeschool conventions and meeting homeschoolers and selling our curriculum to them. And we just loved it. We've just met so many amazing people and gotten to go so many wonderful places. That's another part of our research, is as we traveled, we visited historic sites, and I will take pictures of exhibits and the little sign that's next to them, and then sometimes those pictures end up in the books. So we've been able to do a lot of hands-on research that way just by traveling to conventions. But yes, we're just grateful recipients and grateful to all the people who trust us you know, with their children. You know, we'll hear from people who, you know, their kids have grown up with, you know, reading what we've said, and that's humbling and gives you a great feeling of responsibility. I've got to do this right. I can't lead these children wrong. You know what Jesus said about that? You know, don't ever, never harm a child. I can't quote it at the moment, but so we take this responsibility very, very seriously.
So is there ever a thought of, okay, let's do math, or let's do science, or let's let's do grammar?
Not math. my husband could do that. I couldn't. But, yes, he's toyed with doing some grammar. He would do a great job at that. And if God lets me live long enough, I will do I hope I get to do that. That very first one I wrote that we sold when we first started, it was called Creating a Sense of Wonder. And it was what the Bible said about what God made. And I would like to publish that. We just got to the point that it was so primitive compared to what we do now. You know, we used to take it to the copy shop and print it and punch holes in it and stick it in a 3-ring binder. I hand drew the illustrations. I knew so little about computers when I wrote that I had to just write some of the page numbers on by hand. And but, you know, several people have graciously used it and enjoyed it. It is a dream of mine to publish that again. But other than that, I don't foresee us doing any other subjects. I mean, we've got economics, geography, government, civics, world history, and American history. I think that's enough. I'm 70. My husband is 72. We probably won't do any other subjects. He's updating our American history for high school right now, and we are very careful to say updating. We would never say revise. That's not a word you want to use if you're. And we don't revise it. we're not revising it. We're not revisionist history writers, but we always try to be careful to say that term update. And the reason we say update is, you know, when you write history, history keeps happening.
Yep.
If you published it in 2016, there are things that have happened in that last 8 years. Our American history for middle school goes through President Biden, but our high school probably only goes through, maybe President Obama. So, you know, if you're going to stay up to date, you just have to update it every once in a while.
Well, history is my thing, and so I'll just throw this out here as a way to end our conversation, is that, you know, you could certainly include at this point COVID, but do we really understand the long-term consequences of COVID? And so when you talk about updating, that's going to be, there's going to be a lot of historical written about how COVID changed us as a people.
You have to try, though. You have to, and people just have to look at your publication date and give you grace that you did the best you could. My last update of America the Beautiful went through the last presidential election, and I just had to write what we knew at the time. And, you know, it's just, we're human beings, and we mean to be accurate, and we believe we are accurate, but we don't know everything. And, you know, we probably don't all know everything about World War II yet.
Nope.
So that's another reason that you update. Ray updated his government in 2023, and we are due to update our civics. Our civics says things now that our government's changed some since we we did a few tweaks last year before we did another printing to fix some of those things that had changed. But it's time in the next
couple years
we'll have to.
It's not a revision, it's an update.
No, you won't ever get a revision from Knotgrass history.
Charlene Knotgrass, she and her husband Ray, and really it's a family affair with the Knotgrass History Homeschool Curriculum. Thanks for sharing with us today. It was fun.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.